everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined here, as always, by the sultry, the luring, the exotic Sondra. Hi, Sondra, how are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing pretty well. I like that intro. That was pretty fun. I'm doing well. Retro Raw was certainly a thing this week, wasn't it?
Because watching the Retro Raw along with this week's Raw is very fascinating. To kind of watch as a social experiment. I'm currently drinking an absolute mango vodka with lemonade.
That sounds delightful.
Very nice summery drink. If you've not tried, ladies and gentlemen, absolute mango vodka, you're missing out. It's my summer drink of 2019. I'm not even getting sponsored here by Absolut, but you know, I'm open to it.
I'm not a big Absolut fan, but some of their flavors are pretty decent. They don't do added sugar, which is nice, so it's not as like cloyingly sweet as some of the other ones. I just think Absolut vodka as a base is not my favorite. But yeah, it's just acceptable.
Yeah, their base one you wouldn't go for, but their flavors are very good.
Absolut Elix, though, their single estate wheat vodka, like that one is fantastic.
Ship some to me and I'll drink it. So we're here to talk about Raw on April 25th, 1999. I can't tell you what happened on Heat because I've not watched it yet because I'm still catching up with Finn. But you and Finn, Sondra, reviewed Backlash 1999 for Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes. And you loved Austin and Rock. Who would have thought it?
I loved Austin and Rock. I thought Austin and Rock was fantastic. Like, and this is, you know, I am open to liking matches that The Rock has when they're good. Like, it was really, really great stuff. It was awesome to be into Austin again. I thought, you know, it was kind of a show of too many brawls. Like, there were too many hardcore matches that might have been a little bit too the same on the show. But I think Austin and Rock was my favorite one. And they told a great story. And it was fantastic. I loved it. Absolutely worth checking out. I mean, I know it doesn't seem like news to be like, oh, Austin and The Rock had a good match. But for me, who's not as invested in those characters as a lot of other people, it was really great to see.
And I would say it's better than the WrestleMania 15 match. I enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah. It was.
We're just trying to kind of get caught up here. So we're doing this one. Tomorrow we're going to record the pilot of SmackDown from April 29, 1999. So we'll be recording that tomorrow. Then on Friday, we'll be recording the May 3rd episode. And then hopefully on Sunday, we'll record the May 10th episode. And then we'll be caught up on Retro Raw. So expect a lot of Retro Raw coming through your ear holes in the next few weeks.
It is a Retro Raw marathon.
And there is a ton to talk about. I was talking to Steve Gunn last night and he said to me, what are you most looking forward to Sondra seeing in 1999? I was like, there's so much. Because now we're just getting to the point where so much happens all the time that it's going to be a struggle to keep up because we're about to have multiple factions on the go at one time. A lot's going to be going on.
Even on this show, it was kind of confusing figuring out who's still in what faction and who's against one another. And there was a lot. I was confused. And also, I was really tired watching the show, so that didn't help.
This week, Raw got a near 6.0 rating against Nitro's 3.9. So WWF they're doing very well. I didn't realize this episode took place. I think it was the evening after the Columbine massacre.
That happened that day.
So in the original episode, they did have a graphic sort of in commemoration of the students of Columbine. If you're a movie buff, I would recommend Michael Moore's documentary film, Bowling for Columbine. It's a great movie.
It's very well done.
We start the show.
Remember when school shootings were actually like a national event and everyone paid attention to them?
Oh yeah, and it was Marilyn Manson's fault for having like songs, not the fault of giving guns to people.
Yeah. Anyway. Mm-hmm. No, I just remember when Columbine happened. It sent a shock through America, and everyone was like freaking out about it for a long time. And I mean, there was just another school shooting the other day in Colorado, and I saw like one tweet about it. That was it.
I remember the 1996 shooting in Dunblane, and within a year we banned all assault rifles in the UK, and there's not been one school shooting since.
Mm-hmm.
Funny that. So we open up the show with clips from the main event of last night, with Austin retaining over The Rock, getting his two titles, Vince helping him by default. We see a limo showing up, Vince is looking raging. We obviously had the where to Stephanie, which is, you know, this iconic line Undertaker has.
Yeah, there are certain moments that are starting to happen in 1999 where I'm like, oh, okay, this is this, you know? Like mm-hmm. the wedding at the end of this episode. It's like, okay, now I'm finally seeing it.
So we get The Rock coming out at the start. The crowd in Hartford are all about The Rock. He is pretty much a face now. He said he would whip Austin's ass all over the arena, and he did. Gives credit to Austin, but then changes his mind, calls him Texas trailer trash. Then Shane McMahon comes out with the corporation. We've got Triple H basically in the ear of Shane the whole time. How life mimics art, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Shane, you know, basically Shane's saying that everything was handed to The Rock and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's Rock's fault that he lost. He's a loser. Rock threatens to stick something up Shane's ass.
Standard.
Yep, standard. Shane tells The Rock to smell what the boss is cooking. Then Rock tells him that he has 3 seconds, and before he can do anything else, Triple H grabs him and decks him. Then China hits The Rock, who slowly turns, and then Rock hits China. I thought it was a really cool moment, though, where Rock has this kind of, should I hit China? And then the idea that, well, no, she's in it now. She's going to be physical, so...
Well, and JR on commentary is really, really just aghast at all of this. He's like, well, I mean, if she wants to... She wants to act like a man, then he's going to treat her like a man.
Apparently so. And then basically the corporation beat up The Rock, and as Shane's leaving, Rock challenges him to a match. And what was the line that you loved again?
It was if your testicles... It was something
about
enough,
like... If you get enough sugar in your testicles to face The Rock.
No, it was like, if your testicles aren't too full of sugar, then you'll want to, like, face The Rock this very damn night or something. It was something about testicles being full of sugar, and I wasn't what that meant. Like, because the way The Rock phrased it was very awkward, and I couldn't tell if he wanted Shane's testicles to be full of sugar. Like, if your testicles are full of sugar, does that mean you're going to answer The Rock's challenge? Or if your testicles are full of sugar, does that mean you're too scared? Or... I wasn't sure about the phrasing there. It was very confusing to me, but it was a line. It was a line that The Rock said. The Rock seemed a little bit off in this promo. Like, I mean, he was still very good, obviously, but he seemed to just be kind of rambling a little bit because he kind of forgot where he was going a little bit more than he normally does because he's normally pretty on top of it. But yeah, sugar testicles was not something I expected.
Yeah, it almost struck me as maybe like Rock was going babyface and there was going to be like a slightly longer, like maybe the next week he would have turned babyface, but at the last second they were like, let's do it tonight. And then Rock kind mm-hmm. of had to go with it.
Well, because at first, didn't he call out Shane McMahon?
Yes.
Like, because Shane McMahon didn't just like appear. I think The Rock called out Shane McMahon as being the piece of trash who didn't count the three for him, right? Because he was like, that was the whole thing with Shane McMahon was the guest referee. And so it was supposed to be guaranteed that The Rock was going to win the championship back. And then that didn't end up happening because, you know, Vince McMahon interfered and all of this stuff. Because Shane McMahon definitely was on The Rock's side in the match at Backlash because he refused to count the three for Austin and flipped him off instead. But he didn't get the job done to count the three for Rock winning the championship over Austin, because I forget who actually was the final referee that came in. Was it like Hebner or someone, right?
I think it was Hebner.
Yeah. So because Shane McMahon got knocked out and Vince hit him with the title and all that kind of stuff, then Shane McMahon was not able to fulfill his duty. And so apparently now The Rock is fired from the corporation. Shane McMahon has fired him and everyone's beating him up. And yeah, I mean, the crowd is super behind The Rock and he's officially a babyface now if he's out of the corporation, even though he's still a despicable person, but people love him.
So then we have, the story of the evening is when Vince is waiting for a phone call from The Undertaker. He's with Patterson and Briscoe. Shane and the corporation are cracking jokes backstage. And this leads us into a tag team match.
McMahon's acting with Patterson and Briscoe here was like, it reminded me of like the first couple episodes of Twin Peaks where everything is just so tragic and so upsetting. And there's like so much crying and all this kind of stuff. It was very over the top.
His daughter's been kidnapped by The Undertaker.
Been kidnapped by The Undertaker. It's true. I'm not even criticizing it. I'm just saying it felt very somber.
He was definitely channeling his inner saboteur.
He was indeed.
We got Kane and X-Pac defending the tag team titles against The Brood, Edge and Christian. Match is very short and to the point when Edge ends up getting chokeslammed. 1, 2, 3. They win and then the lights go out and flicker. The Brood's beating up Kane. Kane's had a bloodbath. And in the midst of the bloodbath, when he can't see what's going on, Kane grabs X-Pac and chokeslams him over the barrier. So we're led to believe there's dissension with Kane and X-Pac. What did you make of this and the kind of the slow story they're telling you with Kane next pack? Are they friends? Are they not? What's their relationship like?
This was my very favorite thing on the show. I absolutely loved it. And it played out throughout the show too, the Kane and X-Pac dissension did. First of all, I mean, the match was shortened to the point, but it was also really, really good. I loved seeing the Brood wrestle Kane and X-Pac because I thought the wrestling was great. And we're just getting to a point in 1999 now where there are some really skilled wrestlers having some good matches. And even if they're short like this, it's just refreshing to see good wrestling on a show that also contains the Acolytes where we don't get good wrestling, right? So I want to like shout out to the Brood. It's interesting because I know later in 1999, Edge and Christian become more Edge and Christian, right? And I don't know when and how and all of that stuff, but it's interesting to see them kind of as a tag team. They're both very good at wrestling, and I really want to see more from them. Kane and X-Pac are my favorite story on Retro Raw right now, and I think all of the character motivations line up and make sense because Kane has been hurt before, right? Like Kane obviously was hurt by his father, and then he joined the corporation and was hurt by them, and China turned on him and broke his heart, which was really tragic. And so Kane's been through a lot. It makes sense that Kane doesn't necessarily trust X-Pac because they became kind of unlikely tag team champions. They almost won it by accident, right? In a similar way to Daniel Bryan and Kane winning the tag team titles years and years later as Team Hell No, it was, you know, another sort of trying to forge the waters of working together as a team, but Kane doesn't really trust X-Pac. X-Pac doesn't want to screw over Kane. He has no intention of turning on Kane, but he doesn't trust that Kane will ever trust him, right? Like he can't control Kane and he never knows what Kane is going to do. So in the end, when, you know, Kane gets the bloodbath and the only one he sees around is X-Pac, like on one hand, Kane, do you watch the show? X-Pac doesn't do bloodbaths. The Brood do bloodbaths and you just fought them. So of course the Brood did this to you. But on the other hand, Kane is a very damaged person and he's going to take out his aggression and his frustration on the first person he sees, which is X-Pac, and he chokeslams him over the barrier. I thought it was a really emotional moment. And I was kind of like, I really hope this isn't, you know, the breakup of X-Pac and Kane quite yet, because they haven't been together very long. I love them as tag team champions. And I want the story to continue. So, I mean, I guess we'll talk later on about how it ends up playing out and whatnot. But I loved this. I loved it 100%.
Yeah, it was a fun angle. It played into the kind of the fact that Kane and X-Pac are not like firm pals, so it's not like they have this built-in trust with each other, and it made sense.
They worked together well enough in the match to retain the titles, though.
They
so
did, yeah.
It was, you know, like they're getting there, but they don't necessarily trust each other as humans, but they have a common goal.
The phone finally rings. It's Undertaker on the phone for Vince. He tells me he knows what he wants. Vince says he has the documents. Vince says all he wants is Stephanie back. Once Undertaker gets the documents, Stephanie will be returned to him, but warns that Vince better not slip up. Vince warns him, and then Undertaker calls Stephanie his soulmate, and he should not be spoken to like that. He wants to meet in this place, but he wants Austin to deliver the documents and not Vince. And Vince is like, I can't get him to do that. There's no way I can get Austin to do that. Which leads me to what I actually thought was a really effective segment, which is that Austin comes out. Michael calls in the ring. Austin tells him to get lost, obviously.
What documents are these?
Well, I assume it's going to be that Taker's going to own the company. He's handing the company over to the Undertaker.
Oh, because I was so confused about what documents needed to be delivered. I don't know that that was made very clear.
I don't think it was, but I think the only thing I could argue is that in 1999, there had never really been a documents storyline. So it was kind of obvious that's what it would be. Whereas now, we've had so many documents storylines that never went anywhere, that I think it plays differently now. Like if we've seen all the ones that have happened before. But
no, if they would have just said, like, you need to deliver the documents for ownership of the company, then it would have made a lot more sense to me. I didn't understand what he was delivering and why.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was fairly straightforward. But yeah, he's going to deliver documents, and the documents are supposed to be to basically own the company. That leads us to Austin, who comes out to cut a promo, talks about beating The Rock, and then Vince comes out. And Vince is saying, like, I don't mean to interrupt you. I know you don't like me. Feelings pretty mutual. And he basically, long story short, says it's personal, you know, Undertaker wants you to deliver these documents. Austin's saying, you know, you saying you need me, I want you to say it. Vince says it. Austin reminds Vince about him making his life hell for the last year and a half. And he teases that he might help and then just tells him to kiss his ass. And I thought
Stone Cold Steve Austin needs Vince McMahon to kiss his ass.
And I thought what was so brilliant about this segment and why it really worked for me is that the story that they're telling with Vince McMahon, I think, is excellent, because everything that he did for the company is catching up to him. Because, you know, The Undertaker has decided, you know, he's become a maniac who kidnaps people, and he's kidnapped Stephanie. And Vince has finally realized what life is all about, and that, you know, his daughter's far more important than the company and all that kind of stuff. And he goes out here and makes this, you know, father plea to Steve Austin of, please help me. And Austin, after all the shit that Vince has put him through, is like, no, I'm not going to help you. And I thought the way that they played it was really good. But how did you feel that the segment went with the Undertaker call leading into the Austin promo with Vince trying to get Austin to help him?
I mean, I think it makes sense. It's still, it's always going to bother me in the back of my mind that, like, the prize or the, you know, the person on the line is an actual human woman, and she's basically just being treated like a commodity. So that makes me not like the storyline probably as much as some people do. I think the motivations make sense. Like, Austin wouldn't want to help Vince McMahon, obviously, but it is kind of like, I mean, there is like a human life on the line here. So for Austin to be like, no, I'm not going to do this, is like, you are putting an actual human woman like really at risk here, because if you don't do this, then, you know, what's going to happen? I know Vince McMahon has said explicitly, like, don't call the cops. There will be no cops involved. So they haven't, you know, they're not just ignoring the fact that someone should be calling the police to deal with the situation. I don't know why he doesn't want cops. Like, does he think that the Undertaker is just going to kill her or something if there are police involved?
I think it's like if you're watching a movie and a kid gets kidnapped, and it's like, well, you need to bring this cash to this location, no cops. Mm-hmm. And if they see those cops, they might kill the kid. They might not let the... I mean, it's basically following most, you know, conspiracy plot movie
kidnapping
thing. Yeah, that kind of thing.
So. So, and that makes sense. And so, you know, for Austin to get Vince McMahon to say, like, Vince McMahon needs Stone Cold Steve Austin, felt like a moment for sure, because for Vince McMahon to say that about Stone Cold Steve Austin, I mean, especially after Vince McMahon kind of helped Austin win the title last night at Backlash, it's, you can tell that relationship is changing, and Vince McMahon isn't so, like, maniacal about hurting Stone Cold Steve Austin and all this kind of stuff. The relationship's definitely changing, and I understand why Austin doesn't want to help Vince, but it's like, Austin not wanting to help Stephanie does make him kind of a dick. So I don't know. There's a lot going on. I think it worked. It's just all of the motivations are very complex.
Yeah, and it's a good point you make about a person being on the line. And this is one of those cases where, like, 9 times out of 10, I think when you watch these shows back, women are treated horrendously on all fronts.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is one of the occasions where I think that Vince wanting Stephanie could have been just as easily about a boy, but the only difference would have been the boy would really have had to be like 15, because the idea in this era is that, you know, a 21-year-old boy could fight for himself, but a 21-year-old girl couldn't. That's what you're led to believe in this time frame. But I think if they played the roles well, I like those kind of movies anyway, so like kidnap movies that, you know, there's the drama and the chase and, you know, you have to get the kid back. I like those movies, so maybe that's why it worked specifically for me, but I thought they did a good job of playing their parts, and it would go on later on to continue. We lead to Val Venus versus D'Lo Brown.
It does make me laugh that, like, it seems like the Undertaker segments have been leading into Val Venus segments lately, and, like, you know, all the drama of, like, a kidnapped, you know, woman, and, like, he's gonna do unspeakable things to her, and then it's like, like, Val Venus music.
There's a much better one coming up later. There's like 4 things in a row that happened that are just the best, and I'll read through them in a bit. I made a note of these. But we get Val Venus versus D'Lo Brown. Val's kind of got the upper hand. Out comes Nicole Bass after she'd propositioned him on Heat. He is not reciprocal of her desires, I guess. And she ends up distracting Val, and he ends up losing to D'Lo. Post-match, Ivory gets on Nicole Bass's back, tries to choke her, but Nicole Bass flips her over, and you know, she's interested in Val, he's not interested in her.
Why was Ivory jumping on Nicole Bass's back when Nicole Bass distracted Val Venus, and then D'Lo Brown won? Like, because Ivory's with D'Lo Brown, so shouldn't she be happy that Nicole Bass is
something happened with Ivory
causing D'Lo to win?
Something happened with Ivory and Nicole Bass on Heat the night before.
Okay, I think they might have played that in a video segment. I can't remember. I do not like this. I do not like this at all, because I just see this going all sorts of places that I am not going to enjoy.
One of the things that I think
look of disgust at Nicole Bass is not great. Like, I just feel bad for her.
I was actually reading an article the other day from, is it Marta Kaufman, who did Friends?
Okay.
One of the creators of Friends. She was talking about, you know, today, and because the thing is, when you do something in 1994 and then you're judged on it for 2019, we have come a long way in a lot of ways. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of judgment to be had. And she had said that the one big regret that she had was the portrayal of Chandler's dad.
Right.
Because at that point in time, they didn't know where the world was going, or that the words they were using would later on be really problematic and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And so, that they were probably hurting people at that time. They just didn't know it.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I'm watching Nicole Bass, and I'm kind of going, right, okay, I am very aware of the conversation Sandra and I are going to have in the podcast. Like, I'm aware of it. What uh-huh. can I bring to it? And it's the only thing I want to say. I'm not defending it. When I was 12 and 13, Jamie Mel and I watch it and go, oh my God. Because we'd never seen a woman like that in right. our lives. In any magazine. Like, the women like that did not exist in my world, where I was in Scotland. There was no access to seeing any women like that. So there's a shock factor when you see it. And the mm-hmm. other thing is, Nicole Bass, God bless her, she took a lot of steroids.
Yes.
Which made her far more masculine, more and more and more. And I think that the thing that I think is maybe so shocking about her appearance is that she is this woman who's taken so many steroids that she looks almost unnatural as a woman based on what the social norms were of women at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then she's got, like, lipstick and makeup on.
Well, her rouge is terrible. Like, even her makeup is, like, it just looks really unkind to her. Like, they have just, like, really stark, like, dark blush on her and, like, lipstick and stuff. The portrayal to me seems very mean-spirited, because it seems like, look at this very masculine woman, and it almost seems like they're making her, like, oh, look how funny it is that she's trying to be feminine and all. Like, she's having feelings for Val Venus, which, I mean, make better choices, Nicole. Have you seen this program? But, you know, like, she is attracted to Val Venus. And then his utter disgust at her, it just seems really, like, mean. And mean in the same way that they've, you know, treated China in the past, too. Because it's been like, oh, is she really a woman? She must not really be a woman, because look how big and strong she is. And she really can't be. And now China obviously is... feminize her appearance quite a lot, but it seems to be kind of the same thing. They're just like, oh, look at this freak of nature, and ha ha ha, isn't it so funny that she might have feelings, and let's do all we can to just point out how funny it is that she would be attracted to a regular looking man.
Yeah, and
he would never want to be with a monster like her. It's just so mean.
It is mean. It is mean. There's no way around it. But I mean, she terrified me. That's all I can
She's
really
a
say.
Big, intimidating presence. Like, I like her so far. I mean, I don't think she's good at wrestling or anything like that. But as a bodyguard role, like, I'm kind of like, yeah, she's cool.
I tried a couple of times, maybe 2013, 2014, to reach out to her to get her on the podcast, because I really wanted to talk to her. But I thought she'd be an interesting interview to have. But we were never able to make it work, because I just don't think she was all there from the communications that I'd had with her. But yeah, I mean, she's. It's because she ended up dying, I think she was 52 when she died.
Right.
And she was declared medically brain dead following a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Which, look.
Because that was a couple years ago, right?
February 2017. So.
Okay. Because I remember when that happened, it was really sad.
Yeah, it's not going to, and this is not going to be more of a tribute to it as we go on here. Anything else to say about it?
No, I mean, it's just the whole thing just seems really mean and gross, basically, is kind of how I feel about it. And I just feel bad for her. Like, as a character, I feel bad for her, too. Not even just as, like, a human performer. But I'm just like, aw, like, she's declaring that she has feelings for someone. And he's, like, looking at her in disgust. That's not cool. Like, I think Nicole Bass is supposed to... Is Val Venus supposed to be the baby face again? Is this another one of these Val Venus situations?
He is. Yeah, he is. I mean, what I will say... is I don't think it's going to be quite as bad as you think it's going to be.
That's good, because I'm expecting very bad.
Okay. I mean, it is going to be bad, but, like, it's maybe not as bad as you think.
Okay.
So Anyway, so we up next, we get Austin's in the back, Big Show's staring at, and this again, I just thought these were really great, nuanced segments where Austin's in the back and Show's staring at, and Austin's like, what the hell do you want? And Show's like, it's his daughter. And
that
it's
was
such
good.
A good, like, it's such
and Big
a good
Show is not, Big Show is not a fan of Vince McMahon at this point, because Big Show is out of the corporation. Big Show is a babyface. I mean, he is the laziest babyface and most unlikable one ever, other than like Val Venus, obviously. But, you know, like for Big Show to be the one saying that, I think was a good detail, because he is also against the corporation. He's also against the McMahons, but he's like, dude, like, it's a human woman and it's his daughter. It bugs me that, like, this is one of the nuances of the story that does bug me, is like, it's Vince McMahon's daughter and they're treating like his daughter as his property. It's not like, dude, she's a human person who you should want to help. And I know that it's a language thing and I know it's nitpicky, but it bugs me.
And I get it. I mean, I think, again, not to harp on with this, but like, I think part of what is so frustrating for me watching current product is that there's so many little things you can do like this, where you have stuff backstage and you involve multiple... Like, look at Big Show. Big Show was involved in this storyline at this point for 5 seconds, and it was really effective. And
because we knew who he was as a character, and it... You know, like, I mean, just being able to explain motivation as to why it was interesting that it was Big Show means that it would have been different if it would have been like Bob Holly saying that, you know,
because
there's a difference.
100%. Then we had Billy Gunn's not happy that X-Pac failed to beat Triple H last night at Backlash. It leads us into Triple H versus Billy Gunn. This was not a good match. It was
shocking,
dull.
Shocking that it was dull and it involved Triple H. But I think the most exciting part of this match is that this was the debut of Ass Man.
It was the debut of the Ass Man song that we've all grown to love. He loves
them.
He loves to kick
them. He loves to lick
them.
He loves to stick them. I was so happy to hear the Ass Man song at this point, and then so disappointed that I had to watch a Triple H match. Triple H has new music too, and it's boring. Just like him.
At one point, Road Dogg comes down, China heads him off at the pass, and Triple H hits the pedigree. 1, 2, 3. That was the end. It was very dull.
It was very dull and annoying that Triple H is the one that they really, really like. He is Baron Corbin. I stand by it.
I mean, he's only Baron Corbin for a couple more months and then he gets good. But yes.
But
for,
I'm saying, right now
he is Baron. I mean, yes. Okay. Anyway. Shane's giving orders backstage. She whispers something to the Boss Man. We've got Man K and the Big Show against Boss Man and Test. I did love that Big Show's on the graphic that they showed for the show. Big Boss Man has like a really cheesy grin. I don't know why. And Big Show has
anticipating shenanigans that will happen in future.
And the Big Show has a t-shirt and says, no gimmicks needed.
What?
It's the World Wrestling Federation. It's all gimmicks.
I suppose. I know.
Like, I don't know. I am like...
Is it like no gimmicks needed because I'm so big and that is a gimmick in itself? But like, that's a gimmick.
Yeah.
It's being big.
They're all gimmicks. We get Mankind and Big Show against Boss Man and Test. Mankind can't do a lot. Big Show's not very good. Boss Man's quite old and Test doesn't really know what he's doing. But in spite of all that, it was like 5% better than what I've just described that they could do.
That's true. I am struggling to remember much about this match, if I'm honest. I like the Big Boss Man quite a bit.
He's just a good character, right? He's a good dick, nightstick, Boss Man, Cobb County, Georgia. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I really, really like him. I'm glad that he survived his hanging at WrestleMania.
Yeah, took a week off, but yeah.
Just 1 week. Just a week. Not even really a week, just the next night. He was back the next week.
The match was kind of... The story of the match was basically that Test was trying... Test is kind of getting pummeled. Bossman comes in. Bossman refuses to tag Test in. Tags Test in. And it's all kind of leading to these, like, tension moments with Test and the Bossman. And in the end... Big Show's pissed, goes for Boss Man after shoving Test aside. Mankind's got Socko. Test takes Socko. Mankind gets the win. And then post-match...
Well, because they're fighting because at Backlash, in the Boiler Room Brawl between Mankind and Big Show, which made no sense as to why they were having a Boiler Room Brawl, but Test and the Boss Man did get involved at the end and, like, beat up the Big Show, right? And then... Or beat up Mankind. And then, so now Big Show and Mankind are back to teaming again, like they were before WrestleMania, before they had a Boiler Room Brawl, and they're friends again. And now Test and the Boss Man, you know, in the corporation are fighting them. I think that's supposed to be the story.
Yeah, that's pretty much the story. And then in the end, Boss Man ends up getting in Test's face. Test decks him, goes to leave, and then he just gets battered with a nightstick. So
dissension in the corporation.
Dissension in the corporation. So I want to give you the... I think it's here. Is it here? Yeah. I think so. But basically what we do is we get the following three moments in one go, right? One after another. So we get Vince McMahon waiting for The Undertaker's arrival with the briefcase, right?
Is this when he's just back in that corner?
Yeah, so he's waiting. He's got the briefcase. He's ready there to deliver the documents, right? Then we cut to Austin, who sees him in a monitor and is pacing, thinking about what to do. Then we see Hardcore Holly beating up Al Snow with a pole, right? Then we cut to 1950s America for Beaver Cleavage threatening to fuck his own mum. Then we cut to The Rock pacing in the locker room. Then we cut back to the ring to see the entrance of a pimp with 50 hoes. All in the span
1999 was crazy.
2 minutes. So good. Any of that that you want to break down, Sandra?
I mean, there is definitely a lot going on. Vince McMahon pacing and waiting and Austin watching on the monitor, I think, was pretty interesting, because I think at this point you kind of get the feeling that Austin's like, I don't want to help Vince McMahon. I don't want to help Vince McMahon. I don't want to help Vince McMahon. But oh shit, there's an actual human person on the line here. Because like, if Austin doesn't help at this point, he's no better than anyone else on the show treating Stephanie like just a piece of property, right? Like, she's an actual human woman who they've made into this really creepy character and made her like feel way too young, and I'm not a big fan of it. But yeah, so there's that. Beaver Cleavage is a thing that's happening in the world. I've heard of Beaver Cleavage. I'd heard that this was a thing. That's Headbanger Mosh, right?
It is, yes.
Okay, right. So Headbanger Mosh is now essentially Beaver Cleavage, who's like eating cereal or whatever. I can't remember the line, but who's playing his mother?
She was like a bodybuilder woman they were bringing in. She actually, okay. What was her name? It was Mariana something. Hang on. Because she actually, I think she died relatively young.
Oh, really?
Maria Komlo, she died. She died in 2004 at the age of 35 from breast cancer.
Oh, wow, that she sucks. That sucks a lot.
Bodybuilder, and then she ended up in WWF. This doesn't last long, but she's there very briefly, and it doesn't really go anywhere. And then she ends up going into, like, did she do it afterwards? And I don't know what she did afterwards, but, yeah, it was quite sad. She died young.
Well, that is really sad. But I mean, this is basically just supposed to be a parody of, the Cleavers, you know, Leave It to Beaver kind of stuff with sex jokes. Like, she's sitting there with basically like a very revealing outfit. So she has a lot of cleavage going on and whatever. And she's like, well, is mother's milk what will make you happy? And I don't know. The whole thing is ridiculous. It makes me laugh.
So we're seeing these very quick segments of Vince there with a briefcase, Austin pacing at the monitor. It's something that we talk about quite a lot. We're like, we just want to see something that tells us where the story's going.
Yeah.
Like, so if you give us...
And it's not like long segments or anything, but it's enough to like further things along. And then Al Snow and Bob Holly are just still fighting. I guess we don't have much to say about that.
Yeah. But like, even that still fight. That 15 seconds was good because it took you a little bit further to where the story's going to go. Mm-hmm. We get Godfather versus Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett thinks that Godfather should put the IC title on the line. Godfather has a huge amount of hoes for tonight.
My favorite part was when Jeff Jarrett got on the microphone to be affronted, right? Like, I'm a former two-time Intercontinental Champion. He goes, and hoes, I don't know who you think you are. In his Jeff Jarrett voice. Like,
he also fucked up a line. I can't remember what it is. it was like he was supposed to either, and he said weether, like, and it, yeah. But he just continued as if he hadn't done it. But anyway,
which, so bless him for moving on.
Bless him. So he wants the title on the line. So Godfather said, I'll put the title on the line, but I want you to know that if I win, I want Deborah to join my hoes. And mm-hmm. to be fair to Deborah, she's just like, yep. Jim Ross is like, Deborah's telling Jeff that she's absolutely okay with that situation.
Well, that's the thing, is that like anytime the stipulation is that Deborah has to like get her puppies out or anything like that, because, you know, Finn and I cover the advent of the puppies chant. Thanks, Road Dog, die in a fire. Oh, gosh, it's so infuriating. That was one thing we haven't mentioned yet. Jim Ross was with Jim Cornette this week and not Jerry Lawler, and it was refreshing.
Yeah,
it
Cornette was
so
good.
Refreshing. Because, like, here, I think Cornette has to make mention of Deborah and her puppies and whatnot, and you can tell he's just like, you know, if Jerry Lawler were here, he would be talking about, you know, her puppies or whatever, and he was like, I'm quite a canine lover myself.
So good.
But I mean, he's not so incredibly irritating about the whole thing. He's still adding to the story. So it was just refreshing to hear Cornette on commentary for this segment, especially because of everything that was on the line. And anytime the hoes are around and anytime Deborah's around, it's not going to be good. And having all of them together, I think Jerry Lawler probably would have exploded. Is that why he was off TV this week?
Yeah, he was just recovering mm-hmm. from the puppies.
The stipulation of Deborah joining the host, she's just like, okay, fine, whatever. Like, and it's the same kind of thing when, you know, the stipulation is, oh, you'll have to, you know, get your tits out. She's always kind of like, okay, I mean, they're great. Why wouldn't I show them off?
Yeah, she's fine with it. So Godfather retains, Deborah's going to join, but Owen Hart takes it away. He's just like, nope, that's not happening. So
yeah, we finally see Owen Hart. We haven't seen Owen Hart in a while.
Owen Hart, who looks like Steve Irwin.
He kind of did. Yeah, his hair was a weird color. Owen Hart feels like such an afterthought at this point.
He does. He does feel like an afterthought, which is a shame.
Which is really unfortunate.
Vince is still waiting. Then we get PMS.
But the match was not, like, the match was not as bad as I thought it was going to be, the Intercontinental title match.
It was
because
decent.
Because Jeff Jarrett is very good, and
what was
Godfather, I don't know, I'm
waiting?
Not... He was the Godfather for sure. I mean, Godfather matches are never going to be like my favorite thing, but I think Jeff Jarrett worked really well with him. And I don't want the Godfather to be Intercontinental Champion anymore. Can this just be done?
Eventually it's done. Anyway, PMS are backstage. They are rubbing a man's body, and it is the debut of Sean Stasiak in his initial character, Meat.
So he is just called Meat, because
yep.
They said something about.
She is,
this meat.
He is 100% USDA approved meat.
All right then.
And he is going. He's the meat that is not done until they're satisfied.
I mean, what even can you say to that? They had some line too where I remember when it was just us and we didn't need a man, but until we saw this meat or something like that, and I'm just like. How many storylines have you been involved in where you're not with a man?
We've all been there, Sandra. Come on.
Well, I know, but just, you know, they're like, oh, remember when we were just by ourselves? No. No, I do not remember that, because the whole time you were by yourselves, you were also just like fucking with D'Lo Brown or, you know, trying to sexually assault Mark Henry or doing whatever. Like, they've always just been with men. On the television. I wanted them, like, when they initially debuted, it was cool because they did turn on, like, Mark Miro and Goldust for being dicks to them, but, like, since then, they've just kind of been around dudes.
Then we go to, we're going to get Bradshaw versus Ken Shamrock. Farouk ends up blindsiding Shamrock. They try to fight him. Tess runs out to kind of... get involved. Tess and Shamrock clear the ring. They kind of glare at each other. Are they going to be on the same side? So we're kind of seeing these, not alliances, but we're kind of seeing people with similar enemies who are just fighting with each other, which is good. And I love when Shamrock's insane, and he hit Bradshaw in the face with a chair, which I appreciated.
Angry Ken Shamrock is my favorite Ken Shamrock, and the Acolytes are bad. It was interesting to see Tess run out and make the save, though, because Tess obviously... up until today has been in the corporation. And so him kind of getting decked by the big boss man means that maybe he's not super loyal to the corporation anymore. Ken Shamrock obviously was in the corporation, is no longer in the corporation after the Ryan Shamrock debacle. So alliances are kind of shifting. It is getting a little bit confusing to tell like who's on what side. But if you really sit and think about it and have like a standard like org chart or whatever of who's in what faction at what time, the motivations do seem to make sense for the most part.
Yeah, they make sense for the most part. Then we go to Shane McMahon versus The Rock. Shane McMahon has taken one of The Rock's jerseys and turned it into The Croc, which I at first thought said The Cock. But no, it's The Croc. Rock is destroying him. Triple H and China come out to make the save. They end up working him over. So, you know, Triple H and China are helping Shane, and Rock is now officially a babyface. So,
and the crowd was all about it. They were chanting Rocky so loudly.
Yeah, they love him. They really love him. And it was interesting because he was kind of, he's not the main storyline in this show. So he's kind of being positioned as a secondary story where he kind of feels bigger than the story that he's in, because at this point, Triple H isn't a main event star. So Triple H and China beating down Rock kind of feels like a slight level below him. But it's, I mean, I guess it's good that he's in there and they kind of have to build them. So it makes sense, but the crowd were so behind The Rock here, and he got killed.
He did get killed. I mean, China is still wearing her horrendously high heels, which makes any sort of beatdown that she does less effective, because she kind of looks like she's going to fall over a lot of the time. She can work the heels for sure, but it would just be better if she didn't wear them. Finn and I are kind of obsessed with this, but it made The Rock feel a lot more sympathetic than I thought I was going to feel toward The Rock. Like, he's never going to be my favorite, but in the context of everything, he's been beaten up by so many people, right? Like, he has, like, the entire corporation is trying to beat him up and go against him when he was supposed to be the, you know, the poster boy for the corporation and all that kind of stuff. So it was effective, and the crowd is super behind him. I can't say anything that they're not. Shane McMahon is just such a shit, like, he's just such a shitty person that you want to see him get his comeuppance. And so for the corporation to kind of get the upper hand is frustrating. And I think that helps The Rock be even more likable.
Yeah. Yeah. And the story seems to be quite organically going along, you know, like Rock's felt like a babyface for a while. And that's kind of a testament to how popular he is, given how horrible he has been as a person and as a character. Like, mm-hmm. what he did to Mick Foley, the fact that people still want to cheer him just shows that they kind of had to go with it. So, It felt pretty organic. Vince is still pacing at the garage, then he leaves. Stephanie is screaming as the ministry bring her into the arena. This brings back X-Pac. He's been looking for Kane. He doesn't know what his problem is, but he wants him to get out here right now. Owen and Jarrett blindside him, put the boots to him. Here comes Kane. Kane clears the ring. X-Pac is, valiantly trying, and Kane just picks him up and carries him to the back, and he's being a good old tag team partner. All's well that ends well.
Sweet. It was so sweet. Like, Kane coming out to save X-Pac made my heart really happy, because, again, this is my favorite story on Retro Raw right now. And I love friendship, right? And so I think Kane saw in this moment that, you know, X-Pac, he was angry at Kane. He was calling him out, and he was like, I will fight you if I need to fight you, because this is ridiculous. Like, we cannot have this dissension. You can't have this, like, distrust issue, basically. And X-Pac has a right to be angry. You know, he keeps getting attacked by Kane. And so, Kane sees that X-Pac is in peril, and that's his tag team partner, and he doesn't want to put the tag team championships in jeopardy. And also, I think he's finally seeing that X-Pac is genuine when X-Pac says that he's there for Kane, and they want to be friends, and they want to be tag team champions together. And, you know, Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart are dastardly. They're just going to attack him, and that's not fair. Like, it's not cool to see X-Pac just get beaten up by these two dastardly people. I think the testament to this segment working is that X-Pac was on the microphone, and I still like him in it, right? Like, most of the time when X-Pac gets a microphone, I'm like, ugh, just stop talking, you're so annoying. But the story's so good, and the motivation and the emotion behind it is so real that it absolutely works for me. I love this. And seeing Kane carry X-Pac to the back, I thought was beautiful. Like, they've formed a little bit more of a bridge in their friendship.
So that leads us to the main event segment, where Stephanie's been brought out on the Undertaker symbol. She's in all black. She's screaming the entire time. Paul Bearer's got this book, which is like a sermon. Stephanie is just not agreeing to any of this. We've got Undertaker in some sort of mad cloak. Paul Bearer starts reading vows. Ken Shamrock comes down, because of course he's a great person in reality. He gets killed by Viscera. Shane's holding back the troops. Big Show comes down. He's kind of beating up the ministry when Undertaker gets a baseball bat and knocks Big Show out with it over the top rope. And then, and what I thought was just a really great piece of camera work is, you know, Paul Bearer's like, you know, you're soulmates forever and blah, 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 blah. And you may now kiss your bride. And as the Undertaker goes to take his cloak off and the eyes roll in the back of his head, the glass breaks. And it's just like a great timing moment where Austin then comes out, the fight's on. Undertaker just leaves Midian in the ring, because maybe that's why he had Midian, right? Because there was going to come a day where he just needed someone to just be killed.
Yeah, he just needed someone to be there to get beaten up.
And that's Midian. He can do that very well.
Mm-hmm. Because if he just has to stand there and then die, then it doesn't take a lot of work for him.
He takes a stunner. Austin hits him with a chair. Austin unties Stephanie. And then again, something that I really enjoyed as a story thread is that Stephanie runs into Austin's arms to say thank you, and he just has his hands back as if to say, whoa, 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 this is not what this is. And JR's kind of narrating it with going, he didn't do this because he likes Vince McMahon, he did it because it's the right thing to do. And mm-hmm. Vince runs in and hugs her, and then Vince is saying thank you to Austin, and Undertaker's pissed on the ramp, and it's all chaos, and they go off there. So I know you're not crazy about storylines where women are kidnapped, but how did you think it played out in the main event segment?
I mean, it played out very well. It was done very effectively. If, you know, human women are props and prizes to be won and traded and married against their will, this is very uncomfortable to watch. Like, it is very uncomfortable to see Stephanie tied to a thing, and she is screaming, and her performance is very good. That's what makes it so harrowing to watch, right? Like, the Undertaker is trying to marry her against her will, and it's like, do you take him as your Lord of Darkness and spouse? And she's going, no, 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 I don't. And, like, I can't. There is something in the vows. There is something in the vows about, like, being, you know, bound together and also bearing his children, and it just gets real uncomfortable and dark in that moment, because it's just like, you know, and when the Undertaker's saying, like, yeah, he'll take Stephanie, and then, like, oh, now you may kiss your bride, and she's tied down and she can't do anything, and he's about to, like, kiss her against her will, and the, you know, inferring from this that he is going to then, because he is married to her, take her away and force her to bear children for him and be her, you know, the darkness queen or whatever. It's all like, it's really super fucking dark stuff, and it's really uncomfortable. So if Steve Austin wouldn't have come and saved her, then, like, that's just not okay. Like, someone needs to do something. And it is one of those things where you really have to suspend your disbelief, because JR and Cornette are on commentary, and Cornette's like, somebody needs to do something about this. Somebody with any type of guts. How can anyone just stand here and watch this happen? And I'm like, you're standing here and watching this happen. You are on comment. You are there right now. You are watching this happen. Nobody else in the locker room is doing anything about this. There are no police. I mean, like, I know that he said he wasn't going to call the police because he was afraid of what would happen to Stephanie, but, like, all the people in the locker room backstage, no one is trying to stop this, really? Like, that's terrible. Everyone is a terrible, terrible person. But it's just, like, it's uncomfortable for me to watch Stephanie in this position, but it does bring out emotion, I suppose, because when Steve Austin saves her, it's like, good, I'm glad that he did the right thing. I'm glad that he's saving her. But yeah, it does not make me like The Undertaker anymore, for sure. And I know that that's supposed to be the story. You know, and Jim Ross has a good line at one point where he goes, you know, no one's been a bigger fan of The Undertaker than JR, but those days are over, because this is just crossing a line. Like, you can't do this. You can't treat people this way. And you can't. Like, you shouldn't be treating people this way. So, yeah, I mean, the whole thing is, was this aired in the UK?
Yeah, this whole thing was aired in the UK.
Okay, because you said some of the Undertaker stuff wasn't. So I was just curious if this, like, crossed whatever invisible line they had set or not. Yeah, it was uncomfortable watching. They're still treating Stephanie like she's more of a child, too, which makes it even worse, because I know that she's an adult, but they've been treating her like such a child this whole time that it's almost like he's marrying a child bride, is the way that they're portraying it. And, I mean, it's very Count Olaf and Violet Baudelaire in Series of Unfortunate Events, right? Like, it's really disturbing. Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't like it, but I was glad that Austin saved her. I thought Austin's performance was great here, where he, like, Stephanie runs into his arms, as she would, you know, like, obviously she would want to run into his arms and whatnot and be like, yes, I'm so glad that you saved me. And Austin kind of holding his arms out, like, I'm not your friend. I'm just also not an asshole. I like that Ken Shamrock came out to try to save her too, because Ken Shamrock's great and a good dude. And he saved her before. There's
I
continuity there.
am
It's like,
like I know sometimes whenever we do these podcasts, it's like me trying to be like, this was great, and you're like, it was okay. Like that sometimes that can be what it is. I just love this segment so much, and I think the reason I love it is because, and everything that you're saying is totally true, right? I'm not denying that if you look at it from a lens of now and as a woman, there's a lot of problems with it, right? I'm not saying any of those are not there. But what I love about it is that for me, this is one of the moments that humanizes Steve Austin, because while he might say all this bravado stuff, he's going to do the right thing at the end of the day. And what I think is so great about it is that Stephanie is not, she is not the Stephanie McMahon that we know now. She's not that character. She's not the character that we've known for the last 10 years. She is this innocent little girl who has been taken as a pawn by her dad's fucking games. And when she does that hug to Austin, he just puts his hands up. I was like, I've never seen anything that I think is more in line with a character motivation in my life. With a cat, because he would 100% do what needed to be done, because Stephanie's not really a McMahon. She's a young girl who didn't ask to be involved in this. And the right thing for Austin to do is to save her and untie her, and then his job's done. And then
Yeah,
when
like he got her out of the situation and
he got
then
it
he
out.
wants to be removed from the
And
situation.
then he's just like, and she's like, so like, thank you so much. And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. That don't let's not make this more than it is. I'm doing the right thing. I'm gonna leave. And then Vince doing the thank you to Austin. I think it's just really great storytelling. And you know, we talk about Vince Russo in various ways, as he should be, but I think that Vince Russo, if anybody ever wonders why people thought anything of Vince Russo, I think this kind of stuff is why, because he was good at taking a bunch of characters on TV every week and making every week of TV with them, for the most part, feel like it's advancing something or it's adding a layer to a character. And he seems to do that pretty well under the guise of Vince McMahon in 1997 to 1999. He wasn't able to do it any other time in any other promotion at any point, but he was able to do it here, I think. So I want to give the segment a little bit of love.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm saying it's very uncomfortable and it's not necessarily to my liking.
Yeah,
And,
which is totally
you
fair.
know.
I'm just giving my take
But the
on.
storytelling is very good, and I think as far as character motivation for Austin, it definitely works. And honestly, Ken Shamrock too. Like,
Yeah, Shamrock, Big Show as well. Big Show,
yeah,
I
Big
thought.
Show too. I mean, with the worst big boot I've ever seen,
I mean, it
and
was
I
a
include some of the
medium-sized
later
boot.
Hogan ones in that.
Oh, yeah, okay. True.
No, that was a compliment to Hogan.
I know, it's just so rare that you do them. I always thought you were making fun of them. So yeah, so let's give a thumb. Where would your thumb be for this episode?
I think this one is weirdly kind of it's a thumbs up episode because even though some of the stuff wasn't to my liking, everything felt like it advanced stuff. It didn't really feel like there was a ton of dross the way that a
Had
lot
a
of
good
retro noir
pace, right?
does. It had a good pace. It was easy to watch. Like, I mean, I did fall asleep in the middle of it, but that was because I hadn't slept all day and that kind of stuff. Like it, yeah, it wasn't bad. I think I'm gonna give it a thumbs up despite some misgivings.
Yeah, I'm a thumbs up on it too. I thought that overall it was I think when wrestling's at its best, it gives you a story thread for the night, and you it takes you from A to B to C to D. So, and I think it did this week. So, the next few weeks are fucking they are a thing.
Great. That does not fill me with confidence for the next few weeks.
No, it's not they're bad. I also, you know, I don't think we will, because it's just there's two. But like on May 16th, 1999 was the worst live show I've ever been to.
Really?
Well, up until the main event, when it was the best thing ever. It's the UK pay-per-view, No Mercy. Let me read you the
Okay.
card, Sandra.
Sure.
So basically, it used to be, you know, when they would do one night only, we reviewed that. That what they decided for this show was, right, let's have a house show the same night in the States, and just do a half crew.
That doesn't sound like a good idea.
So, main event, right? I can totally go with it, right? Stone Cold Steve Austin defends the World Wrestling Federation Championship in an anything-goes triple threat match against Triple H of the Corporation and The Undertaker of the Ministry. Makes sense, okay. Right?
That makes sense.
Totally get it. Mankind versus Billy Gunn. Okay, fair enough.
That's fine.
Sable versus Tori.
Oh, boy. The WrestleMania rematch everyone was clamoring for.
For one night only, the European Championship comes out of retirement for Shane McMahon to defend against X-Pac.
I liked Shane and X-Pac before.
Oh, well, it gets worse. Kane versus Midian.
Oh, boy.
Steve Blackman versus Draws.
On a pay-per-view?
The Ministry of Darkness, Bradshaw, Farouk, and Viscera against The Brood, Christian Edge, and Gangrel. And the opener of this show, Tiger Ali Singh versus Goldberg.
Oh my gosh, really?
So, I'm going to leave this up to Sondra, everybody. If Sondra wants to review it, I will review it with her. But I do still have PTSD, so I warn you. This was $14.95 on Sky Box Office.
Wow, Tiger Ali Singh versus Goldberg. That sounds horrendous.
May 16th, 1999.
Wow. And you were there.
I was there.
I'm sorry.
Me and my mom. She took me to that.
I mean, she was trying to do a nice thing and take you to the wrestling.
It wasn't capital carnage, the London Arena. But it was something.
At the London Arena?
Yeah. So a couple of notes from this week that I thought I would tie in. Some pretty interesting notes. So actually, sad news on April 20th, 1999 was the death of Rick Rude.
Oh, really?
Was working for WCW. He had been cut from TV. He'd been with Kurt Hennig before, and he was actually training for a comeback. He was 40 years old, and he passed away. And it's a really sad... One of the first young guys to... I know Brian Pillman had died in 97, but again, one of the first young guys to die, and... Like, Rude was so good. I know we saw him as businessman, turd-coloured suit man, but he was, like, he was so good in back in the day. And, like, I do wonder, like, if he had managed to, like, have a comeback, would it have been anything? Would it have been able to be anything? The odds probably weren't...
How did he die? Was it a heart situation?
Let me just get it here. So, one second.
I didn't realize that he died so soon after leaving WWF.
He passed away of a heart attack after being rushed to hospital. He died of a heart attack, which is they. So what happened was, let me read this out to you. On April 20th, 1999, that afternoon, Rude had taken his 8-year-old son to school, attended a martial arts class, and went out to hit some golf balls. At about 5 p.m., his wife returned from shopping and found him on the floor, barely breathing with a light pulse. She called 911 and he was revived briefly in the ambulance before going into a coma and suffering cardiac arrest in the hospital. The heart attack has been investigated as a possible drug overdose. There were empty prescription pill bottles found near his bed.
Ah, that sucks.
So, yeah, sad. Sad times. But other notes that we have were... Newsweek that week had a story on what kids like. It was a scientific study of 16 kids who were sons and daughters of magazine staffers, proclaiming that the 6 watch pro wrestling, behind 13 who watch The Simpsons and 9 who watch Rugrats. So 13 watch The Simpsons, 9 watch Rugrats, 6 watch wrestling. But according to the story, WCW is in trouble because all 6 were only WWF fans. On the Raw, the last Raw that we covered together before this one, the April 12th episode, when Undertaker talked about putting Christian on the cross live, when they did a voice edit, they replayed it with him saying put him on a symbol because they were marketing Undertaker symbol t-shirts. So they changed.
Oh, okay.
What else do we have? Tank Abbott was negotiating with WWF at this point for coming in. He does not, though. Insane Clown Posse were claiming to be returning to the WWF to second the new clown, who was going to be the other headbanger. Does not happen, don't worry.
I was gonna say, did Thrasher become a clown?
No, he didn't. Luckily, not.
I mean, would that even work? Because WWF already had a clown, and that clown was great. Like, do you really want to have a substandard clown?
I can't argue with you. If Steven Regal doesn't get a job soon in wrestling, he's going to be deported back to England. WWF officials were less than happy because on a USA Today story on the things in pop culture that may have inspired the shootings in Colorado, there was a photo of The Undertaker.
I could see, well, I mean, they were blaming all sorts of, like, satanic stuff and anything demonic. I mean, like, Marilyn Manson was blamed for the Columbine and whatnot, so Undertaker would be kind of in that realm, I suppose.
The Billboard charts for this week, WWF The Music was number 38 with 32,923 units sold. And finally, Vince McMahon sent a letter to Entertainment Weekly complaining because Goldberg was in the cover of their issue instead of Austin. His point was that whatever growth over the past year in pro wrestling was not pro wrestling growth, but WWF growth, which is valid, to be fair, because it really was WWF at this point. Then he complained about...
But, like, sending a letter complaining that Goldberg is on the cover and not Austin, really? That's so petty.
Yeah, it's so uncharacteristic for Vince McMahon. Then he complained about an inside photo of Goldberg and over it said something like, 35,000 people can't be wrong, saying... saying Austin was liked by two-thirds of those people. That didn't make sense. And basically, Meltzer, who reported this, said, I think there should be a law against complaining but not getting your fair shake on an issue that's a total work to begin with. He said that Entertainment Weekly should have let its readers know that their parent company, who also owns WCW, and that's why Goldberg got the cover. Vince
is there. How it works. Oh my gosh. That's just so petty. I mean, not shocking, but petty.
Okay, so that is it for us. Sondra, give us the plugs, please.
Okay, you can follow me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Finn and I cover Backlash over on Patreon. Lots of bonus content going up there in the next couple weeks. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. Tons of stuff from WrestleMania week. All sorts of things to come as well. InsideTheRopes.co.uk for tickets to live events. And I think that's it. Did I miss anything?
No, that is it. Whose retro song should play us out this week, Sondra?
I think that Billy Gunn debuted Ass Man this week. Can we play anything else?
I mean, anything else would be a travesty. Here to play us out is, I mean, I've met a lot of men in my lifetime who love Ass, but I don't know if anybody loves it more than Billy Gunn. Here's Ass Man, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
I'm an Ass Man. Yeah, I'm an ass man.